Ele o sabe.
Capacity as active DPG public transport.
All things. We have members of parliament introducing themselves.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Yami Zevuwe, member of parliament.
Good morning, Chair.
Good morning, my name is Tate Mshula, member of the committee.
Morning, Judge Senkulo, member of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Tim Babses, member of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Susu Adebe, the member of the Transport Control Committee.
Apologies for being late. My name is Vincent Smith.
All right. Yes, I'm Comrade Tebogoti. I chair the committee. Well, DJ, don't shoot in the dark again. If you are invited, I think there's no clarity on the substance of the invite. By all means, call so that clarity is given. I suppose that in all the letters we write, we always add for further inquiries, call the matriarch of the committee, so that there is clarity, because as it would mean that we have come here unprepared. But anyway, I suppose that we should be able to deal with the issue that here. Now, comrades, as the invite indicated, we are here to deal with the unauthorized expenditure of the Department of Transport. We have dealt with unauthorized expenditure before. You recall the House adopted, I think, about four of our resolutions on unauthorized expenditure. We still have a few. I think next week we will be dealing with two or three, so that we can clear the backlog on unauthorized expenditures and clear the book of departments. We have called this engagement DG first and foremost to hear from National Treasurer, because as comrades would by now be aware, when an unauthorized expenditure occurs, the department writes to National Treasury explaining what happened, how it happened. And the National Treasury writes to SOPA an explanatory note, National Treasury. They write us an explanatory note, they call it a report, explaining to us in detail what happened, how the unauthorized expenditure was incurred, what it is that they have done as National Treasury, and then at the end put a recommendation in terms of how they think this will be processed. And once we have done that, we then write our report like we did last time, take it to the House, and if it is adopted as we have recommended, then a decision is then taken and implemented in that way. So today's exercise essentially is to say, yes, National Treasury has sent us a note on how the unauthorized expenditure was incurred, but they want to talk to that, so that by the time we sit down to our resolution, at least we are properly informed. So we'll allow National Treasury first and foremost to talk to us. But we've also felt that it is only fair and correct that the department should be here. National Treasury can only explain on the basis of what they know, but they cannot justify and explain away decisions taken or not taken. So that is why the department is here. So DG, you are here basically to be able to assist in giving further clarity and context to the figures that are here that Parliament is supposed to process, so that whatever decision you take, it must have been properly informed, and you must have had the opportunity not only to present to the National Treasurer, but also to present to Parliament. Right. So I will hand over to the National Treasurer, they will take us through, and then we can engage. We welcome our comrades from the Portfolio Committee on Transport. You are warmly welcomed. Right. Mayor of the National Treasurer.
Thank you very much, Jay. I am going to take you through the report written by National Treasury, just firstly the background and the recommendation, and I will give some detail after that. After legal action taken against the state in 2009, the Department of Transport was ordered by outstanding invoices for bus subsidy services rendered. In 2008-9, it led to an over-expenditure on the program of 844,980,000, and in 2009-10, it led to an over-expenditure in that program of 362,394,000. This over-expenditure was duly reported by the department and to the National Treasury in 2010, and it was also reported in terms of Section 44B of the PMA in the annual reports of the department, both in 8-9 and 9-10. The recommendation that the Treasury has sent to the committee indicates that we recommend that there is a direct charge as referred to in Section 34(1)(a) of the PFMA, so that the Minister of Finance, subject to parliamentary approval, will table a finance bill to cover the over expenditure. The total direct charge will therefore be 1.2 billion. That's the specific number, 1.207,374,000. The reason that the Treasury is recommending that there is a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund, firstly, is that although the expenditure exceeded the allocation on the vote, the expenditure was still in accordance with the object of that program, so in effect money was still spent on what the money was allocated for. And then secondly, the expenditure is in a sense irreversible because that money has now been paid to operators who have already provided service, so in effect we have given households subsidies, and to try and reverse that position would be difficult. Lastly, because it is such a large amount, the Treasury felt that the department vote would not be able to carry such large additional expenditure, neither can it be recovered from the province, which at that point was the agent for the department, or from the service providers. Okay, so that is the recommendation in terms of dealing with over expenditure. Our minister raised concerns with the Minister of Transport in April 2009 on this matter, indicating that there has been significant growth in this budget, that the department has not moved to implement the white paper on moving towards competitive spending, that the department has not implemented a strategic plan that calls for the contracts be converted towards a tendered contract, that we have not, that the department has not improved efficiency, and then also, so in a sense, that the department has failed to implement its strategic plan, which is not in compliance with Section 38 of the PMI, but also that the department did not reprioritize funds. So given if you look at the department's growth as a whole, the growth grew at 33.2% annually between 2005-06 and 2008-09, which provided ample source for reprioritization towards this program. In reality, the department did shift funds about 311 million, but none of this was shifted towards this program. Actually, we found some of the money shifted away. I think the key message that the minister is sent to the Minister of Transport is that we must distinguish between contractual obligations and policy objections, and we must be careful that in our budgeting process we don't prioritize new programs or policies to the detriment of our existing contractual obligations, and indicated that the investigation in terms of effective financial management is undertaken in terms of this program. My overview of the report is just to highlight what was done after 2009 to try and remedy the situation. The first was that an additional allocation of 1.8 billion was added to the transport vote towards our subsidies to allow the baseline to grow at 12%. Also, the Treasury introduced a supplementary conditional grant to provincial departments so that they are able to fund the subsidies to manage the contracts and to monitor the expenditure. The immediate response was positive in terms of stopping the over-expenditure. However, where we stand today, dealing with 2020 hindsight, we are now seeing service delivery being impacted in effect because provincial governments have not added money towards the service. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Well, I think, comrades, if we have questions for Tarish or substantive questions, we'll direct them to both National Treasury and the Department. Yeah.
Thank you very much for the Treasury for the explanation. As big as it was, it was a very quick explanation. I think we need to drive down into the detail a bit more. Maybe this is where the department can come in. The funds expended, or the over-expended, basically comes from, at the end of the day, from an order from the court. Obviously, there was a legal action, and obviously the department lost the legal base. Can we drive down into the reasons for that? What happened that caused the department to go to court against certain operators? What did the department do wrong that landed them up in court? And clearly they erred because they lost the case. And I'd really like to drive down into that. Where did that actually come from? Because effectively what Treasury is telling us here is that we have a department that is deficient in multiple fronts in terms of following a strategic plan, in terms of following effective tendering, in terms of generally being efficient. If you have a department that has lots of problems there, this department has now ended up in court, probably because they were inefficient. They've now had over expenditure of 1.2 billion and we must just come and help them out now. So I'd like to know where the court action stem from. And I'd also like comments from Treasury once the department have responded as to whether or not that court action could have been avoided, and the attendant costs involved in the court action, but that can now be regarded as freezes and wasted expenditure. Could it have been avoided? Okay.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
How did we end up in court?
Thank you, Chairperson. ACFO will respond to that question.
Thanks, Chair. I think the most important part is to understand the issue of the past subsidies as it was taken over in 1994.
and what the reality of it was. We, as long as the phone is going to be long, it's not going to be the one with a much more pointed response. It's going to be very pointed, okay? We took over a bus subsidy scheme that subsidized per passenger the number of people that bus operators would carry in different routes. So what then happened is that and the money that was also given was getting less and less, the number of passengers increased. Meaning you had a number of passengers increasing, the amount of subsidy that we were given, because that's the money that comes from National Treasury, was constant, and as a result there is a gap in which we then had a liability that we then owed to the bus companies. And it got to a point where we couldn't, the amount, the shortage was increasing, so the deficit then increasing over a period that more and more people started to use the service. And as a result, we then landed up in court where that liability had to be funded by ourselves. So that's the long and short of it.
Right. Can we get a comment from National Treasury on the subsidiary question?
Yes, thank you, Jay. I mean, the CFO is correct. Both the department and the National Treasury was cited as respondents in that legal action, with the argument being that the department had requested additional funds but not received it. The board found that the Treasury, being an instrument in a parliamentary decision of the allocation of budget, cannot be ordered to pay, which I suspect begs the question then, you know, what is the issue? I suspect if we want to put it frankly, the issue is that the approach to address liabilities in your budget by asking the Treasury for more money was not the correct approach. So where either the adjustment budget funds were not forthcoming or the actual budgeted funds were not forthcoming, the department needed to ensure that within the vote there are sufficient funds to pay for the service. Obviously the second approach is to reduce the services or to manage the pressure on the service. At that point, bus subsidies were paid on the amount of tickets sold, which was very difficult to manage and to oversee. That has now been shifted to the amount of kilometers of services provided, which is a lot more predictable. So I think there were system problems in the way that the monitoring and of the bus subsidies was taking place. The accounting officer should have taken more care to ensure that those contractual obligations are provided for in the budget. As I indicated earlier, there was sufficient money in that budget to ensure that these claims could be paid. And the last question around whether there were additional costs and what those costs are, I don't have with me, but we can make it available to the committee in terms of legal costs and whether the order was found for the department to also pay the cost of Sarawa. Unfortunately, I don't have that information, but we can make that available in the committee.
Thank you very much, Chair. Well, I'm glad that we're going to get the information. I wanted to first ask about the legal costs, how much did this actually cost us. But Chair, may draw your attention to the document by National to the report, paragraph 4. The PFMA requires that accounting officers assure that contractual liabilities are budgeted for and appropriate steps are taken to prevent unauthorized expenditure. In revision of this, the strategic plans of the Department of Transport repeatedly called for the redesign and rationalization of bus contracts. However, these plans were not implemented and provinces were allowed to expand their bus subsidy commitments. So this just goes down to negligence. in recognizing that the explanation being given by the CFO may make sense on the surface, but it's underpinned by a total lack of adhering to due process. And I think it's also laid out in this mess, and I think National Treasury points this out quite well. So the issue then, why did it happen that way? Why wasn't the obligations met? Because if National Treasury says that money was not redirected to this program and instead money was taken away from the program, the department itself pictures itself in this program and compound the problem further. So my just two simple questions at this point in time. Why weren't the things which the PFMA case should be done not done? And what consequences are there, because the failure to do that has now landed us with a bill of 1.2 billion rand. And then secondly, how much money was redirected from the program? National Treasury said that instead money was redirected. How much was that? So that at least we can get the numbers straight. But I think should take a blank number of 1.2 billion rands in our part would be responsible. So we need to drill down on the numbers as to the specifics and to get a question as to why that money was redirected. That's it.
Okay. Can we get a response to that?
Yeah, I know this, the DG might want to add, but I also just felt like it would be useful to understand the context. If we look at the strategic plan of the department, it has three objectives. It says it must create more efficient services, which means the same amount of service for less cost. It says it must rationalize the services, which means you must take certain services away. And then lastly, it must evolve the function of managing these services to local government. That was the agreement since 2001 between the Treasury and the Department about how to manage these contracts going forward, understanding that we need to get to tender contracts, but knowing that there's not enough money to do all those contracts. Now, I spoke earlier about 2020 hindsight, and now we haven't. Because the Sabawa or the Quadco services in Gauteng was suspended 2 months ago, not even. And the committee will know what heartache that caused, what chaos it caused on the side of the commuters. So, in a sense, we have, as a collective, and I mean the department did pass the National Land Transport Act in 2009 that allows for the devolution, but we haven't devolved. So I think on one hand these are not easy matters to address. It's not easy to do the thing that the strategic plan said you must do. And we have all come together now to say that we must revisit this approach. We must understand where we're taking it. But I just wanted to say to the committee that these are not easy things. These are not easy things to do. So I think in the department's defense, that is it. And then just on a specific question, about 0.9% of that budget. So we grew the baseline by 5.5, the department grew the baseline by 4.6. So it's not a big amount. We used it to show that there was space there for us to prevent the overexpenditure by shifting some of the money off the vote into this area, but it was not prioritized. But I just wanted to also indicate here that these are not easy things to solve, especially in times where the money is tight.
Right.
Did you?
Want to get a response from the department, unless they feel they are fully covered. Okay. Thanks, Chair. I think what also happened is this 2020 hindsight of what would have happened and what expectations were. That expectation was that either had things to rationalize it with us. But anyway, that the question is in which areas would you want to do that? And when people are used to it, it's very difficult to tell them from tomorrow there's not enough money to be able to do that. But I think what should give the community comfort is the fact that right immediately after this court order, we then get 1.8 billion increase in our budget from the National Treasury. So I just did that. We were underfunded at that point. And to that extent also, we have continued to be, and even now when we are speaking, this thing, the amount of the shortfall is still a problem. Like we have seen services being discontinued. But one of the things that must also be clear is the fact that sometimes you plan and the planning does not get to be in the line with what you have, especially when it comes to the
So we never anticipated that the passenger group would go in that level. And as a result, it was unforeseen, and it got to a point where it was also unavailable. Because what you then do is that as the numbers increase, you then you change your scenarios and you put it, but the thing is that it becomes unforeseen and unavoidable, and I think that has been provided for. I do not think that is the case of EPS. Thanks.
I hope you understand here from the system that you don't have the final authority. The final authority rests with us. And Treasury is recommending. And I hope Treasury you understand that. And to both of you are able to convince us, we wouldn't support you. And this, as far as I'm listening to you, you are not supporting us. You are not convincing us. You are lamenting. And that's quite not good for the system. But Treasury are not able to tell us that what's wrong in the system that makes it very impossible that policies couldn't be in place to do the job. You see. Well, that's your first part. There are no policies, and the CFO seems to be very eloquent, very, very well. He's supposed to be knowing and the teaching that policies are supposed to be in place. And you are saying as Treasury, we are using the latest chaos that happens in Mamelodi, and you are coming to justify that. That's quite not justifiable. This is an old case. It means that systems are not in place. And that's what you are supposed to be telling us. Be honest with us. Don't mislead us. Don't mislead us. But now you are not telling us the truth. And you want us to be able to pass and agree with you that no. It can happen. Because you are even saying that it's irreversible. I thought that you understand this is taxpayer money. It's not body money. And you can't say to others that with these human faces, why should it be irreversible when they couldn't put systems in place to be able to make it possible? So you, as well as I was saying that this is very nice, it must continue, this is how this department must be treated. You continuously increase their budget for them. Can you give us some logical reasons to then convince us? Because as of so far as I'm listening to you, you're not helping us at all to listen to you. Let's go to page 2. Finally, the department failed to distinguish contractual obligations which should be budgeted for in the baseline.
Which paragraph in page 2?
It's F.
F.
Yeah. F. Okay. From policy options that can be considered for additional allocations. Now, what is the interest of them? And you are saying that let's take the taxpayer money and give it to people here, they are. And you are saying to us as president, it should be acceptable. We should smile and we should go along with it. Give them the money as much as they can. When there are no systems and no policies being implemented, now you are talking about 2020. We are not involved in 2020, so far. We want to know now. We want our authorization now. What do you say to us? Can you just give us a case? For this, you are not convincing us. And really, if you want us to be able to move with you, put this in front of us, what is it that should happen? But when you make recommendations, the National Treasury recognizes that unauthorized expenditure relates to expenditure exceeding the vote and does not reflect expenditure that are in accordance with the report of the main division of the vote. Expenditure is irreversible. I'm sure, Treasury, you can't expect us to see like that or the money of the taxpayers when you've got a huge department that is supposed to be making sure that if they do it, there will be a DG that are paying here. An accounting officer, which is quite clear, it points to him that he has not been able to talk, he's been talking on behalf of them. So it means that you have a good collusion of relationship and you are relating to each other and the expense of the taxpayers. Give us the reasons, how the DG to talk to us. Who wants to hear what is exactly going on?
All right. Comrade Kuno Ross. Then corporate business. I just don't see you. They're not perfect to you. And I would want to end this. Let us be pointed.
Yeah.
So that they don't enjoy listening to us talking. They must talk to us. As corporate boys say, but give them space to talk and convince us. That they indeed, the National Treasury has recommended should go along with the or should come to a different conclusion. Comrade Kuno?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. The comments from Treasury that this is not easy thing to deal with. Then it means the little fees, both Treasury and Transport have to pay that. So that's not an easy thing to deal with. I think I agree with what Comrade Boy has said. And but Chairperson, my main questions were that the CFO said there were routes that were subsidized. I wanted to find out what routes is he talking about. And if there's poor planning, we'll always experience the problems that you experience. And I know because I've served in the committee before, communication within transport is a problem. Because I think the planning shouldn't be done without communicating with municipalities or whoever is involved. I don't agree with the CFO when he says that it was unforeseen. Because if they had communicated with the people that they were supposed to communicate with, they would have known that there was going to be a passenger increase. But again, they had a strategic plan, Jefferson. A strategic plan that they did not implement. I think it's because of poor planning and negligence, as my colleague has said. And within that, they had, what is it? The shipyard fund of about 311 million. But Program 6 was not addressed. When they knew that Program 6 had problems and difficulties, they could not pay for the subsidies that they agreed to. But instead of dealing with that, they still take those funds and use it for something else. So I'm just saying, it is poor planning. Can you please meet us halfway as a committee? We need to understand why is this unauthorized expenditure, so that as we plan, as government say, this has to be paid within the coffers of government. We need to be saying that with a clear understanding. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, I certainly share the concerns of my colleagues. Also, just to note, in terms of all the departments, that the regular expenditure and authorized expenditure ballooned in the year 2013-14 financial year from roughly about 2.4 billion to 5 billion, which is a trend in all departments. And certainly this needs to be addressed. And it's a daunting task for us, I believe, to recommend approval of funding of an authorized expenditure at this level also. But I clearly hear what the Treasury is telling us. It could be a complex issue, and I agree with my colleagues. Let's find out more why this deficient financial management occurs in all these departments. But, Chairperson, let me touch you just to point B on page 2, that's right, my fault. And for me, the main concern here is the lack of competitive spending, the conversion of the interim contracts into competitive spending. And then, of course, the Treasury says the result of the failure to improve the efficiency of the bus subsidy system was that interim contracts ran for almost a decade, on a month-to-month basis, with very little monitoring of expenditure. I would like to ask the CFO to explain, does he agree that there was very little monitoring of expenditure, or was there mechanisms in place that is to curb these expenditure? Thank you.
Just a minute. Yeah, I think maybe let me allow Comrade Vincent and Shilwan, because I think maybe we need to, so that we are not all over, try to maybe extrapolate 3 or 4 critical points that would assist us to to have a much more clearer position. Comrade Vincent?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, first of all, from your favorite verse, you normally say that we deal with what caused the Haitian to get sick or die. And that's what they've dealt with, or that's what my colleagues have dealt with now. And Treasury has dealt with that as well, Chair. We're talking about the 2011 problem. I think it would be useful, would be for Treasury or the Department to convince us that the cause of this thing has now been addressed. If they are able to say that they've now dealt with, as colleagues have said, the competitive tendering process, if they've dealt with managing unfunded mandates, so this is what it seems like. It's an unfunded mandate that you give a lot to do, you don't get the money to do with it. For me, that would assist us, because I hear colleagues saying that we can't give money away. The fact of the matter is that this money is gone. That's the fact of the matter. So for us to now, let me put it differently. I think it's correct for us to find out from Treasury, because when you start to say, you said we must ask for questions of clarity, nobody seems to be asking for clarity, because Treasury seems to have given us a very clear reason why it's done, and I agree that is clear. I think for us, the question must be, what is happening today going forward? Is this thing reoccurring? That's why I'm happy that the department is, the committee is here, so that the committee itself can take responsibility going forward from today, because we don't see this department every day. The portfolio committee sees this department every day. They should be making sure that these type of things don't occur going forward. So for me, if they could indicate, both Treasury or the department, have they found remedies for this problem? And are those remedies yielding positive results? That should satisfy me, Chair, that this unauthorized expenditure that we have now, or that we're now dealing with, must be condoned. But that going forward, there must be surety to Parliament that the steps that have been identified by Treasury way back in 2011 are now being implemented and are being monitored. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Let me also join my colleagues in agreeing that actually there was a poor planning in terms of this expenditure that we are having before us today. I want Chairman to talk on in terms of the compliance in relation with the PFMA. When you look at page 2, number D, that the department, despite the 3-year MTF allocation, which are made available to the department could not implement its strategy plan. And it will come to mind, and how are you going to achieve whatever that you want to achieve if you don't really follow the strategic plan? And as a result, then you are not complying with the PFMA, which is the main guideline of the department. And the accounting authority, what is it that has been done in terms of this non-compliance of the legislation? Also, when you check in terms of the remedial steps taken on the outcome, you'll also see that these grants which were showing other expenditure. What is it that you're monitoring in terms of the provinces or provincial departments? Is there enough monitoring in terms of provinces? Are you able to say that we are saying in Mpumalanga, for instance, what is it that you are doing in terms of the subsidies? Or you just want to jump when there's a problem, then you'll act? Or what is it actually that is going to happen? But in follow-on to that, I just want to check with the accounting authority that what is it that has been done? Who was held responsible in terms of the non-compliance with the PFMA? Thank you.
maybe as they ask how, I'll be displaying my thoughts. If
thanks. Yeah. It appears that we, and it seems to be endemic at this department and maybe others as well, that we seem to find solutions after we reach the state of crisis. That was in Chatham by Treasury. You know, with 2020 hindsight, we look back and we find solutions. But we need to understand that that's not how government can possibly work. We need to be looking at models of best practice around the world. We see examples in other countries where things have been found, and we move forward. But to drone down on this, on page 2 of the report, it's laid out there, the roadmap of this thing. There was a white paper in 1997, which was largely ignored. There was a 2002 strategic plan, ignored. There was a 2005 strategic plan, ignored. 2007 strategic plan, ignored. That's all there in the document. So all along the way, from 1994, so for 15 years, we couldn't work out how to fix this problem. But the joke is we did work out how to fix the problem. 1997 we had a plan, 2002 there was a plan, 2005 there was a plan, 2007 there was a plan, and then the follow. Now, see if you say that we must find comfort in what you were saying. I'll tell you what I'll find comfort in. I'll find comfort in if you can give me a long list of all the people that are going to lose their jobs, or have lost their jobs, or have been disciplined as a result of the failure of compliance with your unstrategic plans through the years, which landed us in a situation where we have to be dragged in front of a court of law because you can't pay for things. This is not like 2008 or 2009 when you finally realized, you know what, because you finally ran out of money. I understand that you spend more than what you cost, you're going to run out of money. But it's clear that along the road, you knew that. The department knew that, but just chose to ignore it until it ends up in a crisis. And then finally, when you have a crisis, we find the solution. Why do we need to get to the crisis before we find the solution? When we have the roadmap that tells us. So I think the committee would find comfort in the fact of you can give us specific details of who has actually been brought to account because this hasn't followed, or if some of the people present are going to offer their resignations because of this. That's what I would like to know. Thank you.
I wanted to go back. My question was supposedly answered to, just to say quite frankly, I'm not satisfied with the response. Because I don't accept that if they said a big amount of money, what's the big amount of money? Where do you draw the line? Any one rand of taxpayers' money out spent outside the parameters of the PFMA is a big amount of money. So we cannot come in good faith and justify wrongdoing. And I think the department must in good faith accept that there's negligence and they're bad and they're not to the side of the due process which they have to be on, which is the PFMA. There's a point of departure. I think that would convince me. That's what would give me comfort. People taking responsibility when they think they should. We can't have a situation where you play in hide and seek with Ashila. It's not going to work here. Because I think in the essence of accountability, we arrive at such a problem. I know that it's easy to play on the emotions, to say, imagine what happened had we rationalized the people. Of course, that would pull anybody out of their court and say, oh no, there's going to be a crisis, people. Yeah, that's fine, I understand that. I want our people to continue having passports. But people in positions and being paid must take responsibility. And that is why I go back to the question that I asked. What consequences have been meted out against people who have been found to have not followed PFMA? Because I maintain, Chair, that failure to do so was the relation of duty and to negligence. And if we don't address that particular aspect, then we're not going to be helping ourselves. I think Honorable Bartlett has covered me very well when he paints the roadmap that we did not just wake up one morning and arrived here. It's a 10-year, a decade-long, month-on-month problem that was there with little monitoring. Why was it not done? So at the point of departure, let us be honest enough to take responsibility and take accountability. Then we can move forward with the justifications that we want. But in the absence of that, I'm taking no comfort at all as the CFO wants me to.
I think maybe there are four issues that we need to lift up and maybe have an engagement with the department around them. it is the fact that trying to get at the page at the point when we could I think on page one, number four, the last sentence, however, these plans were not implemented and provinces were allowed to expand their vast vaccine commitments. I want to underline that and we can talk to that and explain that and explain it, because that is what they have to do, spending more money than they have. And let's go to page 2B. Overspending arises mainly from the failure to implement the policy decision on the introduction of competitive tendering. Why was that not done? Competitive tendering. And then still on D, I think the last sentence starts with the result. The result of the failure to improve the efficiency of the bus subsidy system was that interim contract ran for almost a decade. Interim contract ran for almost a decade. How do we explain that? And then let's go to page 3, right on top of it. The referendum. In April 2009, the Minister of Finance therefore recommended that the Minister of Transport undertake an investigation into the apparent failure of the accounting officer to exercise effective financial management of the bus subsidy contracts. I think for me these are the administrative issues that I think if we spoke to and say this is what happened, this is, and lastly, without clouding the administrative chair, it's a pity because the minister is not here or the deputy minister, because at least they could talk the politics of this thing. I'm not sure whether the bus subsidy also includes scholar transport, it doesn't. Fine. So we're dealing here with the inheritance of apartheid special arrangement, where people from Kwandebele have to be driven more than 100 kilometers to Pretoria every morning to go to work, and after work must go away from the city to some obscure villages along the Moloto Road. And 21 years later, we have not changed those socio-economic arrangements. People still travel from Kwandebele to go and work in Pretoria. They have not found jobs in Kwandebele to cut, former Kwandebele to cut the travel. So that is the reality of what the bus subsidy by and large things for me is all about. Now, if you have a system where you are paying per passenger, the most important question is how do you monitor that? When PATCO says to you, I carries 15,000 passengers, and then 2 years later they say, no, we're now carrying 35,000 passengers. Are we being cheated? Or was there suddenly an explosion of people riding to town because influx control is suddenly, you know, been abolished, or what was happening, which then makes your subsidy payment to skyrocket. So I'm just saying, for me, there are the political side to the problem, but there is an administrative side, and here let's deal with the administrative side. One, the expansion. Why were these expansions allowed? Two, the issue of competitive tendering. Why the interim contracts? And the call for an investigation, was the investigation done, and what are the findings? I think if we can talk with this, maybe you can assist us to a sense of what the issues were. decision.
Thank you, Chair. I'll ask colleagues from public transport to respond to the first issue that you have raised in your summary about provinces being allowed to expand services.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. I think the language CFO has indicated it would have been better for us to get a brief background of the whole competitive tendering and regulated competition. When it started in 1997, that's when the interim contracts were signed. They were supposed to be for 3 years. They were supposed to be run out, to be put out to tender in 2000. Now, the interim contracts were to prepare operators to participate in competitive tendering. Now, with the first contracts that were issued around 1999, it was then realized that the cost of competitive tendering was too high. That's why only few contracts were issued in cases and in Gauteng. And in 2001, there was a moratorium for three reasons. The moratorium to stop the whole competitive tendering. The first reason was a court order in Western Cape because there were no plans. That was resolved. Two outstanding issues was labor and the cost of competitive tendering. The issue around labor was that when you put competitive tendering out, you change the working condition of people who were previously employed for full time. They were becoming contract workers because every 5 years you have to renew those contracts. And labor and took the department on, we went to NEDLAC. We had to resolve that issue before we can continue with competitive tendering. That was the first point. Second point was that there was a study that was conducted in 2002 between the department and National Treasury where we found that when you put an interim contract out to tender in a contracting environment, there was a 25% increase in the cost, and we didn't have that money by then. So a resolution was then taken to put a moratorium until we resolve those two issues, issue of funding, additional money to put out interim contract into tendered contract. The reason why it increases was that because interim contracts, when they were signed, it was just to take existing operations as they were to put them in what we call interim contracts. There were no standards. Now, when you introduce a contract, a tendered contract or a negotiated contract, there's a whole list of quality standards that are set. You have to put in a new bus, the bus has to follow a certain specification, and all those things increase the operating cost. We didn't have that money. As we speak today, 66% of our budget still goes to interim contracts. Those interim contracts are still there because we have never had enough money to implement competitive tendering through either tender or negotiated contract. It was not necessarily because there were no plans. Those plans were there in certain instances, but there were no funds to make sure that we implement those plans. In 2005, that's where the problem started, where expenditure on contracts started exceeding the budget. And then we continuously engaged with National Treasury to say, because of the lack of funding to implement competitive tendering, we have to continue with the interim contract everywhere. It is not that they were not monitored as they were audited. They were auditing when you paid, the claim was supposed to. They were audited all along. There were auditing companies that were doing the audit. But I think the key was that what was the reason for us not to make sure that all interim contracts are put out to tender or negotiated since 1997? The key issue is about money. We have never had enough money to roll out in the country. That's why even today, as we speak, 66% of our budget goes to the interim contract.
So in this instance, the capitalist thinking of competition reducing costs was actually turned on its head. That's what you're saying. That if we open it up for competition, actually the price goes up instead of going down.
Yes, if I may explain, Chairperson, that was that is how it's supposed to be, because interim contracts allow us to operate without any standard, any quality.
That's why I meet a lot of hardcore buses broken along the motor roads.
Because it's
delaying our people, involving accidents.
Because it's still an interim contract. That's why we're saying they were supposed to be for a short period, and we introduced a better service, which is monitored if you look at KZN, your tender contract, negotiated contract, are monitored on a daily basis. There's quality that is being determined to say, in terms of the contract document, this is the quality and the standard of service that you can provide. Now, for you to read that standard and quality, it means you have to put in new buses so that you can be able to operate. Those are still operating on interim contract because there are those services are not there.
But I see your traffic cops are stopping taxis almost everywhere. You don't tolerate broken taxis, but buses that you are paying the government can be any standard. I don't understand, but anyway, let's I'll come to you, colleague. Can we, right, so the interim, the competitive thing is done. Can we talk to the expansion, why expansion was allowed? Because expansion also meant new routes, new payment. And what is this expansion?
Maybe because I don't have the document there. One of the reasons why you would expand, we would expand there, was that the interim contracts were based on the number of tickets that you sell. Now, when people buy tickets, you cannot stop them at a point and say, this is where my budget comes. You sell, and then after some time, you find that you have sold more, and then you still have to cater.
You actually cannot budget on a month-to-month basis because you don't know how many passengers are going to be carried.
Yes, that's why in 2009, together with Treasury, we then converted them into kilometers. But that is also not saving the purpose, because in some cases you find that the savings are more, but you cut them, you kept them in terms of the budget. That's why we see now the collapse of some of the savings.
All right. Comrades? That's why I always urge comrades, let's be pointed, because when you preface it with a long presentation, the person gets lost at the end. But we'll have the opportunity to... Okay, let me go back to the department. There were a number of issues that were raised, more like comments and observations. Are there issues we would want to respond to before I go back to comrades so that they can be pointed? Are there any issues that you would want to talk to?
Yes, thank you, Jay. Comrade Boyd asked the question around why is it irreversible? The question we have to ask for to recommend to the committee is whether the fund should be, if somebody took the money, can we take it back out of their account and give it back to the revenue fund? Can the department's budget cover that cost? Or should it come from the national register, from the taxpayer, as indicated earlier? What we mean when we say that it is irreversible is that the money was already paid to the contractor and the services were already rendered as approved. I mean, that was what the court case found. It wasn't as if they stole the money. They paid it, it was used for subsidies, the services were rendered. So, in effect, the money is now in the pockets of the people getting the services. So that was, when we say it's irreversible, we are not speaking to where the money was coming from. We're just saying if we want the money to be paid back by those who it was provided to, that will not be possible. So I just wanted to clarify that issue. And then I think it would be valuable to the committee to distinguish between, there were two things that you could do. Yeah, you could you could manage your financial liabilities to ensure that there's sufficient money to pay for the services rendered. That is the one side of this commission. The other side is to change the way we do the service so that you reduce the liability or are able to manage the liability better. If you look at the report, you'll see that in the section under number 5, where our minister wrote to the Minister of France, what their concern there is that the accounting officer did not manage the resources of the department to stop the overexpenditure. The response that I gave in terms of the crisis we see today, and the chair spoke about the special concerns around the apartheid special development, those are the matters that we referred to in terms of the strategic plan, in terms of there was money to do certain work. That work has been the work that has not given us a solution yet. So I'm not trying to protect the department. We are very clearly saying that on the financial management level, the department erred. But it is not the job of the Treasury to say whether they have erred on a policy side. But I can give you some assurance that the Treasury and the Division of Revenue have put pressure on the Department of Transport to review their public transport subsidy policy, to review the public transport strategy that was issued to Cabinet in 2007, so that we can start building on a solution that can address the bigger problem. So the question asked if we are where we are today, did we fix the problem? We fixed the over-expenditure problem. That's what we fixed. Did we fix the other problem in terms of the pressure of these services and how to manage them and how to align them and who should be responsible? Unfortunately, we are not there.
Okay. DG, are there any issues you would love to respond to before I head back to Congress for our presence?
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to check something because the issue of this bus has become a very challenge. I know that recently we had challenges in the middle of the road where PATCO is just already pulled off and Autopex has just came in rescue in assisting in that particular aspect. And I so believe that Gasolimits PATCO has lost the subsidy that they were going to get in the closed roads from the department. I'm trying to check that what would be the possibility of asking Autopex to respond to that particular direction in ensuring that it is you try and respond to the issue of the subsidy of over expenditure, especially on the route of Mulato Road. As you know very well, PATCO has got very, very fresh challenges in terms of doing justice to the community there. That's one question. But the other one, DG, I don't know whether you are aware or maybe you can be able to give us a briefing to say what happened to those officials that didn't comply with the PFMA. In terms of the PFMA Section 36(3)(h)(i), H and only figure 1, it gives you authority to act on the particular officials. I'm trying to check whether you managed to follow the PFMA Section 36(3)(h), Roman figure 1. And if you haven't, that's the means you must be able to go back to Section 35, that you must request the minister to act against you because you failed to execute your responsibilities. Thank you.
Comrade Vincent, then Comrade Kuno.
See, I
I agree again with my colleague. I think this is a complex thing too. We're really trying to, or let me put it differently, I don't know that we can distinguish the politics or the policy from the finances here. Somebody said to us, well, let me put it differently, the finances say you must have a competitive tender process. I understood the department to be saying that policy dictated, when I say policy, I'm saying politics, dictated that if you did that, you have a problem from labor, or a potential problem from labor if you did it that way because of employment conditions and so on. And that is why I'm saying it's a complex matter. Maybe, Chair, you correct when you said the minister or the deputy should have been here to explain politics. But my question, and I just want this reconfirmed from National Treasury, we're dealing here with unauthorized and not irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, Chair. So a service has been provided. Now, that service has been provided outside of the budget is something that we can debate because they exceeded their budget. But for me, a service has been provided. Unless somebody could come to me and say to me that that service was not provided, we spent 1.2 billion rand irregularly. In other words, if there was fraud and corruption involved, it would be a different story from this thing was done, was not budgeted for, but we had no option because that's what the politics dictated at the time. So I'm trying to distinguish between those two. That I'm asking National Treasury. If Treasury could say to me there was no irregular expenditure, I mean, fruitless and irregular expenditure, yeah, then the only route we can take is to talk the politics about it. And that is why I was saying that the portfolio committee then must take the ball and run from here. Because it means the strategic plan is not realistic. They have a strategic plan that they can't implement the money that we are giving them. And that becomes a matter of the portfolio committee and not a matter of scope per se. Because if they deal with that, we'll have the situation again next year and the year before. Had there been fraud and corruption that you detected, Treasury or the Auditor General, has there been services provided? And that should be what guides us, Chairperson. And I seem to be understanding from Treasury that indeed there were services provided. And for me, if that has been done, it's fine. I'm just struggling, Chair, to understand. Let's assume, and I'm not defending it, that's what I'm saying, we will need to discuss this when they go on, as scope and as Parliament. Yeah. Chair, let's assume that the accounting officer in this case went ahead with competitive tender because the PFMA says so, and there was a breakdown of services. How do we manage that process? And I'm not for 1 minute giving them a license to say that they must use that as an excuse. I'm just saying that it's a matter that we and the portfolio committee and the minister must discuss. What does it mean when as you say, Chair, PATCO stands at the side of the road and nobody bothers that services are being provided to them? Or at the same time, when PATCO moves out, how they bring AutoPax and community revolts against AutoPax because they want PATCO. So, it is complicated in that sense, Chair. I don't know how we're going to get a solution today, but I want to reiterate, Chair, that we must distinguish between unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless expenditure. I think that's our departure point.
No, that's fine. I think on the other hand, Comrade Vincent, the accounting officer is obliged to ensure that there is no unauthorized expenditure. So, that on the one hand, once it has happened, then we must make that evaluation that you are making. Has services been provided? Could it have been prevented? Was it avoidable? Was it unavoidable? I think when we come to this kind of session,
That is what we seek to ascertain. And this engagement is supposed to assist us so that after this engagement we can then take a decision. Who was next? Comrade Kuno?
Is it possible that you allow the department to answer questions that you have asked? You are really frustrating us as members here. We're trying to get sense. We need to, we're going to stand in front of the house there and say, let's authorize this unauthorized expenditure. That's why we want somebody to give us sense what has really happened. We've asked questions, so many questions that were not answered. And unauthorized expenditure, I agree with you. I mean, Comrade Vincent, is also a problem. A true class and lawful, maybe the website problem and all that. But unauthorized expenditure is a problem. It says that there was poor planning. You took money that you didn't budget for to do something else. But again, the shifting of funds is allowed according to PMA. But as they were shifting funds, they could not address the problem of under budget that they've made before. And this is what we have asked. The reason why I've asked about the rules chairperson is because when we came in government in 1994, government was concentrating on the triangle only, you know, Western Cape, KZN and Gauteng and all that. That's the reason why I was asking what are the rules that they're talking about. We find that they're still talking about the same provinces and other provinces. They are all forever being forgotten and all that. That's why I wanted to find out exactly who are we dealing with here. Are we going to be dealing with problems of how they year in, year out and all that? Can you please answer questions so that when we take conclusions or summarize the, or recommend anything as a committee, we should recommend them with or help. You are not helping us at all. And can you please, accounting officer, if you can't answer, because I think you are still new, won't I tell you they have been there before and all that? I think they can also give us answers. Thanks, Chair.
All right. I hope you are noting the questions. I think the one I've been reminded of is the route. Which route are we talking about? Comrade Paul.
Question, Honorable Vincent, that at the end of the day, we are the face of society. We express the point of views on this type of expenditures. We speak to society. It's not the paperwork that is being put in front of us. We need to be able to convince society that when it's being said that there's an expenditure that has run around or there's an unauthorized that has been paid, we need to be able to explain. And that is our job. And until we have got some clarity of what is it that we're asking the taxpayer to spend their money on, it will always be difficult. The treasury said it and then we sing the song. And what's the relevance of parliament? Is that parliament must listen to treasury. I don't think the system works like that. We're here to represent them and we're here to be able to get clarity. So when we agree on these expenditures, we know exactly what has exactly happened. And this thing is very old. When it reappears again, who's supposed to explain? We'll be the same people. It's the same thing with the parliament go along to what this department has done. We've seen them, quite a number of them. So for me, there's nothing wrong with the system to appeal to parliament, to listen and get some clarity around these particular issues. So that when we move forward on the basis that you did verify yourself that there is, there will be improvement in how you have done your expenditure. It can't go on for that a long period. I mean, committees have been here. It's been going on for the past 10 years and nothing is being done to resolve the problem. And we must accept that no, it does continue because it's not unauthorized, it's not because of some... for me, logically, the vision of the National Development Plan talks of the capabilities of the state. And if a capable state can't be able to do these type of things and it becomes a recurring problem, what is that we're talking about? You see, I wouldn't wait for any other... I understand why... are interested to understand what is exactly going on. So that when one improves the role of the state, we understand what is exactly going on in this particular matter. So that all of us as a collective in society, we take full responsibility. It doesn't become a shift around. But at the particular moment, our interest is to give us more information and give us more clarity about what is exactly happening here. And that's what we understand. That's what we've been asking for.
All right. That's fine. Can we... Okay, let me give the comrade in the back, and then we can respond.
Chairperson, thank you very much to give me this opportunity. Chairperson, it's true that the issue you are trying to resolve is complicated. You see, I was touched. I wanted just to comment, but I was touched by some of the views which were shared by Honorable Smith. That actually, what are we dealing at the moment? That is the first question which you ought to ask. Because, you see, I thought that we'll be focusing on the remedial action which is supposed to take. Visa, the recommendations from the Treasury, from the Office of the National Treasury, because already they are recommendation. So, my problem and my challenge is that what do we do as lawmakers to rescue people on the ground who are suffering for nothing? And I know that there is a quite difference between the short term and the long term. I thought that in the long term, yes, I agree that we're supposed to agree to address some of the issues in terms of the poor planning. And I'm not defending the DG from his department. He's a human. I think he doesn't have even 6 months. I'm not defending. We're starting to fit the issue which we're dealing with. This point was on 2011. Therefore, I was recommending very strongly that we must separate the two, because we're dealing with an unauthorized expenditure. We are not dealing about corruption, etc., as Honorable Smith referred to. I'll put an example. Honorable Ahaden also highlighted something that as we're talking now, already south of our roads had quite a few withdrawn. What do we do? How do we react in that regard? Because I thought that we'll separate the two, address one, so that others will do something else. Because already, I'll repeat again, what do we say with the recommendation from the Office of the National Treasury? Because there is a recommendation on that regard.
Okay. Okay. No, that's fine, comrade. We deal with what killed the patient in the committee. So we look backwards. The portfolio committee looks forward. We look backwards. So we go and dig the grave, say what happened. So that's why we're focusing on what has happened in the past. Can we get a response from the department?
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I deliberately avoided to mention that I was not very long in the department because it wouldn't help me escaping anyway.
Of course, accountability is departmental, not personal.
Yes, Chair.
Yeah.
I think the honorable members have raised a number of questions just in terms of process, and you summed up and channeled us to four main areas that we should look at as a way forward. That's why the attempts from the department has been to address those four that you raised, but we can go back and look at the number of questions that were raised by honorable members. But just as a prelude to our responses, it is true, Chairperson, that the matter we are dealing with is quite old, going back to 2008, 2009. But we also do accept that in that process unauthorized expenditure did occur. But because of the length of time that has elapsed, unfortunately the accounting officer of the time has left, and many that came before her. But we have taken steps to remedy the cause of the reason we found ourselves in that unauthorized expenditure situation. And as a colleague from Treasury has indicated, this has not been a simple and very straightforward matter. It involves a whole lot of variables. But we are in ongoing discussions with National Treasury to simplify the process and deal with the obstacles and weaknesses as we go forward. Honourable Chairperson, my colleagues will shed more light. But I'm not aware of any investigation that was done on the accounting officer, as it was suggested by National Treasury. And I'm also not aware of any accounting officer having been disciplined. Consequently, but I have the benefit that one of my colleagues was also an acting DG before me is here, and I'll ask him to take up some of the questions. Mawet.
Thanks, DG. Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. I think my job would be probably to respond to the point that pointed in my responses to issues raised. Before becoming pointed, I just need to contextualize my question, my answers. First is that we're dealing with the historical issue. It not started in 2008-9. The effects of this are pre-94. So that's the first context. Secondly is that indeed the narrative you raised, the cable's narrative that says competition reduces prices, in this case failed us. This is accepted jointly by ourselves and National Treasury as a result of the study that we took jointly. And consequent decisions taken forth from the 2002 study are what brought us here. So that's the second thing. But the third thing being pointed in response to some of the questions raised. The questions raised by Honorable Kno on the issue of planning, there hasn't been any poor planning. The planning has been pointed, the planning has been correct. The reality was that we just couldn't do anything about it. We had to continue as chancellor with Intel contract because we could not issue any kind of contract. There was no standard contract came on time. So planning was to point, and hence we were able, in the request we sent to Treasury, we confirmed that. We've been able to request funding. Because of the nature of what we had then, and I'm sure many of you will remember that, in 2008-9, that was the world crashed economically. I mean, let me give you this, one of the stats first, in being pointed, is that the cost of petrol in 2008-9 rose from 656 per litre to 134 in that period. That is 74% increase. And there is no committee in the world that would have led to that. Treasury would not have been in a position to meet that. And that was one of the biggest costs, and that's what Charles raised in submission. So that's the fourth thing. But the first thing, that in terms of the increases that we had, those increases were just under inflation rate, just under the rate of inflation. All we were getting inflation-related increases. And on this side, cost of labor and cost of provision of services, including the expansion, were increasing. Hence, in 2009, in the transformation of the public service, public transport strategy, we came up with what Marisa, National Treasury indicated. On a great principle, therefore, using the Division of Revenue Act to then begin to say how to best transform. So that's
fourth thing. And one of the most important things that we've got to understand in responding to Honorable Kunoa again on the issue of intersphere communication, one of the biggest problems, and I'm sure members know that, of the current constitution with respect to transport is the issue of concurrent functions. Municipalities, provinces, and nationals have the right to plan. And in most instances, they plan differently. And sometimes these plans do not point. Hence, you had expansion of services not being met by the allocated subsidies that they got. Department of Transport played no role except in a conduit, getting the money from National Treasury at the meet. But in the context of the reform we did jointly with National Treasury, we are now using the Division of Revenue that in fact getting the plans, therefore dispersing the money on the basis of the plans in the kilometer. So in addressing and being forward-looking, responding to that issue of forward-looking, that would not happen. In fact, the consequence of it not being happening, we see it on the road. Because we are not going to be able to pay through what we can pay in addressing the issue of what is efficient. What we are now having are unintended consequences of self-savings because we are not paying beyond what we can pay. And in doing that, the Honorable Captain asked, how do you as an accounting officer spend more than what we have? We're not spending more than what we have. We can't spend more than what we have. So that's the third response. But the fifth response, which is the issue you raised, Honorable Chair, and saying, what happened to the investigation? I think, as officials, we are not in a position to respond. I'm sure the accounting authority, the executive authority, would be best placed to respond. But as to whether officials were disciplined and in them discharging function as it was, it was not a responsibility of officials. As I said, we're victims of circumstances. We joined ourselves, the Department of Transport, as well as the National Treasury. The second issue, the issue around efficiency. Did we adjust to deal with efficiency? Of course, yes. Because we realized first that the current efforts are insufficient. What did you do? We wrote to National Treasury, ask National Treasury to make available funds to meet first the service level, but secondly the cost. And of course, National Treasury, given the nature of what they need to address, not only about transport, the Treasury raised in the submission that the transport vote between 2005 and 2009 had quadrupled. And that's correct, because we were beginning to then transform public transport system and services to meet not only 2010, but leave a legacy for future. So there was that transformation, and indeed it did meet, but it could not, because there are other who was responsible for non-compliance? There was, in the context of what we face with, no one broke the law. And either to deliver it and not discharging the function because they wanted to achieve something. You therefore could not charge anybody. This was as a consequence of things that we acknowledge, both in the strike and the transport. Both ourselves and National Treasury, we can't do much. We've got to continue with the nature of the contracts we have issued out the interim contract, in others with an intended contract, in other areas with a negotiated contract, and that's what we looked at. What needs to impact that correctly, the terrible three, Western Cape, KZN, and Gauteng last. The other provinces, for historical reasons, they've already had planned, if I may use the word the TV state, to not have challenge. Largely because they were providing the services. But the problem of integration, which is what we still have today, and one of the challenges, the historical challenge that we are dealing with and trying to solve with the transformation, it's going to take some time. Up until we are in a position, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member, to then deal with the issue of competitive and get the relevant funding associated with what would come out of the competitive processes. All of us know that we now are putting up a public support plan to transform this. This is not only a requirement for Department of Transport itself, but this is a national requirement to say the expansion of settlements all over must be premised on the transport plan, because you can't establish settlements outside of a fleet of transport problems. So those are some of the issues that we are putting in place, and that's what has helped. Was it negligent, as the Honorable Sangwa said? There is no negligence. It could not have been negligent. It was the result of an outcome, a joint outcome. These are the unintended consequences. Have you seen it? And it's therefore the submission of the department and what National Treasury is saying that in considering the submissions of two departments, please take into account. Did we fail in implementing the policy options? No, we did not. That's why now the last policy option that we took, okay, let's use the Division of Revenue Act, let the transfers were directed to provinces. We then monitor, and then monitor province execution. And that's why we have been such a failure. Is that correct? I'm not a politician, but I don't think it is correct. But you do have service fears, and that's an unintended consequence of the policy option that you chose. So those are some of the issues, Honorable Chair. And again, was there foreign corruption? No, sir. Were services provided? Yes. Is there a roadmap? Yes. And the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Transport is here, and the members of the Portfolio Committee on Transport are here, and they can confirm to there is a roadmap was presented. So it's honorable chair, and I think from our side, we've been able to attend to what we can best attend to. But we are victims of the economic situation, and I'm sure many of us understand that we can't control. We are both price takers as well as consumers of services, and therefore we try the best we can. And I think Charles has responded to the second question you raised on the policy decision of introducing competitive tendering while easy with internal costs. I've also alluded to why employment continues to go on. As you said, 96%. But some 66% of the five odd billion that we are getting still goes to internal contract. And service levels are going to continue to fall up until we get to a position where we really deal with this matter. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Can we have follow-ups? Let me allow the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Congress.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm just keeping quiet to have a feel. I don't want to start my way, let me just indicate, Chairperson, that there's a precarious situation which is happening here. And probably maybe one would hasten to say it is important that we're able to get the time frame as to when I'm talking on behalf of the Committee of Transport, as to when will the interim contract end. Because you can't have something as an interim from 1997 to date, almost 20 years, that we're having something in the interim, which actually will exacerbate the situation of unauthorized and authorized, because you have a situation where you are unable to pinpoint as to what exactly is the problem with this patient. Even when you do post-mortem, you are unable to have feelers as to what exactly killed this patient. That is the first thing that I wanted to talk to. But also, looking at the whole situation, I think internationally, there are challenges and patterns as to how transport can be able to deal with. Chairperson of SOPA, for as long as the department keeps on procrastinating in dealing with the critical policy imperatives, what's supposed to have been implemented, cabinet has really endorsed those. There are so many policy imperatives that as a department, we follow those policies, particularly looking at public transport. We will be able to deal with some of the challenges that people are trying to grapple with here. Because actually, even when you look at international patterns and trends, you're saying you're price takers in this instance. But you can be able to dictate and say, this is how we're going to be running the public transport in the Republic of South Africa. And you put it probably. Those operators who actually are, we have been talking to them last month incidentally, because the taxis are now, Chairperson, saying, for when must we wait for us to be subsidized? We're subsidizing only subor members, we're subsidizing only bus operators. As taxis, we also want to have this cake because these are the type of challenges. And lastly, I want to say that probably, it will be very, very important that we go into an exercise as a portfolio committee to try and assist
scope again, as to how do we work with you as a department in making sure that we're able to look at the issues that have been raised, particularly the problems that the Chairperson Scope has raised, and particularly the things that Treasury has raised in this instance of the strategic plans which has not necessarily been followed. How do we deal with that? Because these are some of the things that we are still experiencing, DG, even before your arrival. These are the things that we are experiencing. How do we deal with some of the challenges of flouting policy, putting a roadmap and not even following that roadmap? Because indeed, I went to the roadmap is there, but I can vouch, come the end of the financial year, you don't have followed 90% of that roadmap, which actually leads to some of these situations that we find ourselves in. And I believe that once we are able to sit and deal with this type of issues, hindsight, let me say, the big superpower of last year, we have been able to indicate and pinpoint to certain things which we believe, assisting Treasury, we can be able to come into, zoom into some of those and be able to deal with them. This is the beginning of trying to align some of the things that have been out of the rail system and be able to really walk the path and walk the path. But I can now call you tomorrow. I know that those issues that we have raised, the recommendations that have made, have not been followed to the matter. And that is what is a challenge, DG, that you got a train which actually had a bias with the alignment somehow. If it's a bus, if it's a train, it's the rail is different. Thank you very much.
Okay, Comrade Kiango, Comrade Boy, then Comrade Kika. Check.
I think the explanation which has been rendered to us before the Chairperson, Honorable Chair of the PC on Transport spoke, seek to dispute everything that National Treasury has said to us. Because it wants to be exonerated to say, no, it's really not our fault. The economic meltdown was not 10 years. We all know that. And specific things have been raised by Treasury to us, and we are dealing with them now. I maintain, Chair, in the essence of taking accountability and responsibility for this, we have a serious problem. Because in as much as the service has been rendered, unauthorized expenditure remains unauthorized expenditure. It's in contrast, it's in contradiction with the law. And people must take responsibility. So I'm not prepared, Chair, to sit here and listen to a situation where the department has to absolve itself of any responsibility. Whereas Treasury, whom they are saying that they are in this together, explicitly says that there has been contravention of the PFMA. Why can't anybody take responsibility for that? Because none of these explanations speak to the contravention. So, Cham, we are all claiming to be convinced, and still maintain that none of these explanations do that, because the department wants to keep accountability and responsibility at arm's length and wants to point the problem somewhere else. There was no economic meltdown in 2004, there was no economic meltdown in 2006, so 2008, and National Treasury says that for a decade-long situation that we are in. So really, I don't think we should build semantics, Chairperson. The point of departure is taking responsibility and accountability.
On this one, I thought that Mawele has done a very good job to be able to give context to what exactly has happened. And he then goes back to what Vincent has asked for. But what is it that I'm looking at? And I thought that given the focus of SCOBA, this is what is being affected, that you just give us the context of exactly what has happened, so that you could look into it. How we interpret it is something different. It's our responsibility. We are the politicians. But from the point of view, we have given us what challenge and why you sought to have this type of environment. And I would think, Comrade, from where I'm seated, we should accept his explanation and be able to put it into context. But whatever we consider as parliament as a committee, there is a case to be made. And we make it in the platform of scope when everybody is gone. But at this moment, we accept what my word is presented to us, that it does make sense, more than what Treasury was trying to do, to just accept
what they think is their problem, not the problem, more broadly for us to be able to appreciate the challenges that are there. So, that's where I'm leaving.
No, that's fine. What's next? Was you completely done, and then the rest? Okay,
that is what I was going to say.
All right. And of course, I understood him to be saying, let us say, we have heard you. Because we are still going to fight.
Yes.
We have heard you.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, sir. Just to make the comment that I'm a bit lost with regards to competitive tendering that increased.
Just pull the mic a little closer.
I was a bit lost with regards to the comment that the competition increased in terms of tendering. Increase the cost. To my mind, this competition always reduces cost. And perhaps this is a question to Treasury then, just your view with regard to that comment made, because that is important. If we could have had competitive tendering, the cost should have been reduced. And then I'm also lost with regard to the presentation by the DG, the former DG, which clearly indicated requested more funding and spoke about the unintended consequences. But in terms of the report that we have, it clearly said that funding was shifted away from this program. The 4.6 million was shifted away from the program, and then for a certain period, 311 was shifted towards the program. You know, this is it's just amazing that we find that it was a set plan, but in the BRRR, of course, when they evaluate the reports of that department on a yearly basis within the BRRR, the recommendations were certainly made on a yearly basis that there should be increased costs, there was a lack of funding, and why was it not implemented in those during that process? Thank you.
Right. Chief? You're fine. Okay. Right, can we respond to what Ross has raised, and let's get a comment from National Treasurer. Competitive bidding, like I said, the capitalist logic is
yeah, I think the capitalist is an ideology, and the issue is the practice, which I suspect the largest was the agreement with Labour, and I don't have the words, Lisbon, but there was an agreement that the conditions under which, thank you, yes, that the conditions would be retained. So a lot of the benefits of going out on tender would be to get cost-effective services, but if you lock in certain parts, that's the one aspect. The other aspect is need. So when you go out on a tender, I mean, it depends on how you do it, and to ask for services in areas where there's a need, you would at this stage exceed your existing allocation. One of the members spoke to an unfunded mandate. Expecting our defence, I don't think there is anything like a fully funded mandate in our government. But that was a lot of the reasons why that process was there, and why the request was then to find out if we can gain efficiencies, if we can rationalise the service, and if we can merge it with existing city services to get the efficiency. So, I mean, in a sense, that is it. Of course, the way forward, in line with our constitution, will remind us, and I think the chair of the portfolio committee can help if we continue. And I know it is a more complexity, but I think if we go back to basics, she's right that we can address it. So that's just in short the issue of a competitive tendering. I just also, Honourable Member Smith, the irregular versus unauthorised. Unauthorized expenses defined in the PFMA gets two definitions. The first definition is one where you overspent on the vote or on the program. In this case, this is what we're talking about. It's neither. It is both the program and the vote overspent. But the B definition asks if it was not in accordance with the purpose of that program. And that's where we're saying the expenditure did take place in accordance with the purpose of that program. So you correctly highlighted this. It's not the irregular matter. The money was not wasted. It was not spent fruitlessly. It was spent on what it was intended. But the control, the internal control of the department to ensure that this happened both on a financial management level and on a policy level led to this over-expenditure issue. The Treasury is sensitive to the complexities of the policy area, but we are very clear on what should have been done by the accounting officer in terms of the other expenditure. And then there is a question of the number of routes. It is 11,727 as we stand.
Right. Well, I think, comrades, maybe we should leave it at this. Safe to say that ZDG, it is pointless to have a strategic plan that you can't implement. Mr. Mowet, you can't draw a straight plan, and then when you want to implement, you say it is not implementable. It's almost like you drew it with your eyes closed. You see, in from this side, we can talk politics, objective and subjective forces. You see, what you want and what is real. So you try and put a balance between these two. So when you draw a straight line, it must be formed not purely the wish list, but on the basis of what is realistic and implementable. And when team was talking to it, it's like that about three or four times where you had a straight line and could not be implemented. But I think the portfolio committee should also assist us in ensuring that when trend plans come before the portfolio committees, they are thoroughly scrutinized. Are they realistic? Are the goals measurable? No, the SMART principle. Right. I think the committee will help you. We'll go and sit down and then decide what we want to do. Just this thing around the interim contracts. I don't know that even the taxi people complain, but of course that's more with the provinces about permits, interim permits. Perpetual interim permits. You never get permanent permits. So this is a complex thing. Do need to be attended to. And the issue of can I have your attention? So even the thought I wanted to talk is just, you know, it's just vanished. What was the issue? No. Yeah, the issue of competitive bidding. I think the issue that we may need to look at is whether, because you were taken to court by bus companies under a particular umbrella, to what extent are we having collusion among these people? And no, let's all put, you know, we saw that 2010 with the bidding of Stadia, where the big companies, instead of competing, you know, the capitalist logic, you compete and then prices go down. But where there's collusion, there's no competition. So maybe we should just kill competition and let the state take these things and do things once and for all. All right. Okay. Before we go, DG, you want to have a straight
time? Thanks, Chair. And thanks to the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Transport, as well as honorable members here. I just wanted to state, honorable chair, that we take your questions, the questions that you have raised, and the comments that the honorable members have raised very seriously. And that going forward, we will utilize those comments and the views that have been expressed to make sure that we are as close as possible to the expectations of both the Portfolio Committee on Transport and this committee. And thank you very much, Richard.
Right, there will be a joint oversight, ourselves, water and sanitation, as well as COCTA, to KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape after next week. That week of the 14th to the 18th. So we will be formed into our oversight on correctional services should go ahead in the following week. Otherwise, the copter oversight is 2 weeks. So we'll be informed accordingly. Thank you. Thank you.